Hurricane Harvey help on Twitter, Reddit, and Google Docs. 711 million email addresses are being used to send out malware. Plus, Russell Hawley from iMore is here to talk about the AR arms race. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1842, recorded Tuesday, August 29th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you what you need to know about the tech news today. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. You know, it's just like going over and over in my brain right now.
What?
Blame It on the Rain. Milli Vanilli. We listened to it before the show and I can't get it out of my brain. Please help me, Megan.
Yes.
Do the first story. Please. Okay. Push it out of there quick.
Well, hopefully it's not too soon for any Milli Vanilli jokes for you. If you have not seen endless stories of human bravery and rescue on Twitter this week, then you are officially following the wrong people. As Hurricane Harvey drops buckets of rain on the Houston area, and then moving on to surrounding areas. Twitter has erupted with photos of tireless first responders saving children and heartbreaking tweets from people stuck in their homes. The Atlantic says an impromptu group of coders and mappers calling themselves Harvey Relief have used Twitter, Google Docs, Slack, Reddit, and other resources to connect people to get help. Their resources include shelter info, remote volunteer logging requests for rescues, that they've seen on social media. So basically, they are scraping social media and trying to connect these people who need to be rescued with rescuers. Brooke Binkowski, she's the managing editor at Snopes. She is the group's spokesperson. And some law enforcement officials have been urging people not to use Twitter as an alternative to 911. But a sheriff in Harris County has been communicating through his Twitter account pretty effectively. But announcing on Twitter that you need help. If you have no followers and no one's there to, and you don't use hashtags, it might be hard. You should keep trying to call 911, they said. So some of these people are government veterans from Katrina, so they know what they're doing. It's as they've said, this is a disaster that's unknown and beyond anything we've experienced. I grew up in Houston. I've seen the neighborhood that I grew up in, the house down the street from me. Like I've seen video of it just being up to the windows.
Oh,
it's
really?
Heartbreaking. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And I've been in touch with a lot of people have been emailing and, some people who checked themselves did safety check. That's mm-hmm. the first time I've really experienced that, where people have marked themselves as safe. And Leo and I talked about this morning on iOS Today. There are many more that didn't mark themselves as safe. Does that mean they're not safe? Not necessarily. Like, there are people that I know never log in to Facebook, so I'm not as worried about those. But you can actually go and click, request that they mark themselves as safe. And I did this, one of my best friends in high school, and then later, she marked herself as safe. Like, of course, you might not have power, you might not have, electricity, all those things. So it might be very difficult to go on Facebook. And
yeah,
it might be the, one of the last things that you think of doing, making sure that your best friend from high school you haven't seen in a couple of years knows that you're safe. But it's always nice to know that, people are thinking about you.
Yeah, I can't even imagine being in a situation like that. It's hard to comprehend kind of the scope of everything that's happening and what your instinct is in that situation. I know for a lot of people, the instinct anytime they go anywhere is to make sure they have their phone on them. And in this case, like, I feel like this is where you see the value of what social media is capable of. Granted, they're saying don't not call 911 because you're posting on Twitter, but I kind of feel like you have to post on Twitter if you have the ability. Make sure and put your hashtag there so that it surfaces, depending on how many followers you have. It might not be seen if you don't put a hashtag there and associate it with something, put it on that list. But I mean, posting to social media, posting to Facebook, it's a quick ping, right? Like you write it, you send it, it's out there, and it's probably going to appear in front of somebody's eyeballs at some point that could possibly kind of, you know, do some action on top of that, maybe alert the right people to let them know that you're in trouble so that they can do the hard work for you on the back end while you're trying to get out of this situation. Then, of course, calling 911 as well. I read about a Redditor that had posted their address to Reddit saying they were headed to the roof and, you know, here's my address, I'm headed to the roof, just putting that out there. And then another Redditor basically followed up saying, I'm unloading my canoe now, I'm on my way. And that's just so cool. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, obviously it's good to call 911 and everything, but you increase your chances by posting it on social media in a situation like this, if you can.
Absolutely. And the negative Nelly inside me is, of course, immediately thinking of that person's address is now on Reddit, is on the internet, and they are known that they, you know, have lost their house. And like in the future, you can imagine a world in which people will then target those people that they
take advantage of.
Please don't do that. I don't know where my mind went to that. I'm going to think more about the beautiful pictures of people rescuing each other. I mean, the thing you don't think of is Houston is the fourth largest city in the United States. It's enormous. There are so many people there. There's so many new building there. They have a lot of like lakes, you know, man-made lakes. It's not really set up for this. Nobody was expecting this at all. When I hear people say like, oh, why didn't they evacuate? Because they did not know where to evacuate to. Like that was the thing. Like, did they want everybody out on the roads so that they could drown out there? No. And so like, please don't blame people for not evacuating because the friends that I've talked to, they were told to stay or, you know, they didn't, you know, they just weren't prepared for it. So it's not, use social media for good. Don't use it to blame people for not evacuating.
Yeah.
Please.
True that.
Mm-hmm.
Ahead of Apple's expected September hardware event, Apple is apparently working overtime trying to secure deals with Hollywood studios to bring 4K UHD video content to iTunes. An updated Apple TV, of course, is expected at the event that's going to support 4K ultra high definition video content. Apple wants to offer movies that support that format. They're looking at the price range of around $19.99. But the Wall Street Journal says that its sources that are close to the discussions reveal that studios are pushing more upwards of you know, $5 or $10 more than that on a title. And I mean, that would be in line with what we've seen. You know, services like Vudu offer ultra HD titles around $24.99 to $29.99. There's definitely a price premium when you're buying a movie that's in the higher res formats. We've gotten used to that with HD versus SD, and now, you know, it's the same with 4K and everything like that. But there's just so much competition in this space right now. Apple, I think Apple's very used to having kind of a bargaining power. At least that was the way it was when they were, you know, kind of in the process of bringing streaming music and, you know, purchase music onto iTunes. They had a lot of bargaining power from their position to really kind of sway things and get really great deals. And now I think that's a lot harder to do. Amazon, Roku, Vudu, all these players are also doing that.
Well, I think also what you said about the way they treated the music industry, the way they went in, the way the music executives saw that, and then you know, the movie executives were like, well, we're not going to stand for that. And so Apple's been trying to get into this for a long time. Like they've been, you know, promising this, you know, Apple TV and a, you know, unique entertainment coming from, and then it's the Apple TV, it's a tiny box like a Roku. Then the Apple TV app was going to change all our lives. And it was basically a search engine for,
right.
for shows that you could already, you could already use the old Apple TV to search for what you wanted to see. So, yeah, I mean, I think that $20 is what they, what they charge for the HD movie. So they want to charge that again. And either they'll be able to or they won't. I mean, the Wall Street Journal said some executives are not going for it, which means some might have already gone for it. So it might be they have some content, but just not all the content.
Or maybe the age of the content, you know, because we're used to seeing that as well, right? Like older, maybe less demand. Like you're probably not going to find Guardians of the Galaxy 2 at that price point, but you might find something. You might find, I don't know, sneakers from the 90s, random movie you've never heard of. You probably find that UHD $18 or something.
Who hasn't heard of Sneakers, for goodness sake?
I'm sure there's a lot of people watching that haven't heard of it. It was a pretty good movie.
I liked it. It was a good movie.
Yeah, I'd pay eight. No, actually, I wouldn't pay $18. I'd rent it, really. If I'm honest, I'd rent it. I wouldn't buy it.
If I'm honest, which I try to be, I wouldn't pay $20. I don't buy movies.
Yeah.
I watch them on Netflix. I like to go to the theater to eat popcorn. We did buy all of the Star Wars movies, but I don't know. I haven't bought another movie in a long time because basically I look at the alternative, which looks free. I mean, I know it's not free because I pay $14 a month for Netflix, but I think I'm already paying for that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pay more.
But there's a lot of shows you're missing on Netflix. You're not getting some of the movies, especially when they first release. And I think I've talked about this very recently, actually. That's where we end up buying is, well, but we want to watch it now, and it's not available for rent right now, so I guess we'll just suck it up and we'll buy it. And sometimes that proves to be good because we watch it again and again, and sometimes not at all. We've got a couple of suckers in our library as a result.
Yeah, I think my kids have aged out of wanting to watch a movie over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
A French researcher has discovered a spam bot that's using 711 million emails to unwittingly deliver bank malware all over the world. Because the bot has legitimate login information and email credentials, the emails used to spread malicious spam often defeat regular spam filters. Troy Hunt of Have I Been Pwned has seen the data and says it's larger than anything he's been sent before, and that it basically includes one address for every single man, woman, and child in all of Europe. The researcher, who goes by the handle Ben Cow, says that the spam bot has caused at least 100,000 unique infections so far. So you can, if you want to check to see if your email is in this list, you can go to Have I Been Pwned and enter it in. It's always sad. I still do it, even though like
you cringe when you do it. And go search.
Well, it was, I've seen the ones from 2014 for a while every time, but then there was another one like from Better Business Bureau or something, B2B or whatever that was. Yeah, that's a new one from 2017. This is called Onliner. It's used to spread the Ursniff banking
trope.
Ursniff. I think it should be like Earl's. I don't know. Ursniff. I like it. Ursniff banking Trojan. And at the time that I was last looking at this, the server was still up, but the person who found it has been working with law enforcement to try to get it down. So.
Yeah, and the Have I Been Pwned folks are saying 27% of the emails from this list are already in the site. So that's a bunch of new emails being added to it. I think, email filters have gotten really good. And part of what has made this an effective Trojan is that the attacker apparently had a huge list of SMTP credentials that would allow it to kind of green light his distribution emails. And he got those from, he or she got those from other breaches, LinkedIn, a hack on Badoo, and a bunch of others. So basically in total, 80 million accounts, 80 million of those credentials. And that allows the email, when he would attach into the email, a pixel sized image, which we've heard about that many times, right? For tracking. If you open the email and it views that pixel image, then that sends the pertinent information back to them for tracking after the fact, IP address, the user agent information when that email is open. And that allows them to know whether you're on a Windows machine or Android or iPhone or whatever. And this is really targeting Windows at its core. So don't waste time with the things that identify itself as Android or iOS. Just focus on the things with Windows. And as we know, you send out a huge bulk of these, you only really need a small percentage, tiny percentage of people to respond. And that's how you win.
It's also a good time to remind you not to put images in your signature. Because we need to get used to not seeing images. Just seeing images in an email like that, a pixel image.
Yeah, you don't even see it when it's a pixel. Probably like a white pixel. A single pixel is going to be really hard to spot. But, I mean, a lot of email services have gotten really good about that too. I think many of them now by default don't open images unless you explicitly elect for it, or you change a setting and say always open an image when I open it.
Right.
When I open up the email, show me the image. You can set it so that it won't do that, and it's more of an on-demand process, and that would protect you, I would imagine, from this, because it wouldn't automatically show that image and send back that information.
Well, another reason not to put images in your signature, because they just look bad. Like,
yeah,
they're broken.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
The Amazon Echo is getting into the Sonos game, sort of. Echo devices will now support multi-room playback, similar to expensive Sonos equipment, and then more recently, Google's own Home and Chromecast audio products do this. Audio played on an Amazon Echo within a network can be synchronized to play across other Echo devices on the same network at the same time. Not only that, Amazon is releasing a connected speaker API, which means that third-party devices with Alexa integration will soon be able to take part in the multi-room playback as well. And this is a function, this is an option that I love. It's awesome with the Google Home. Okay, G, play the Beatles in all rooms, and you know, through the app, I've got it worked out, and boom, all those speakers light up and they're all playing the same thing, and I'm filled with Beatles. It's heaven.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm sure my kids will be very excited when I just say, play my music everywhere. Uh-huh. They have dots in their rooms and they hate my music. So I'm really excited now.
This is how you wake them up in the morning.
Yes.
Set up like a playlist.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
And
that's
just
great.
Loud, as yeah. loud as it can go.
Yeah, or some AC/DC also.
Oh, okay.
Great.
That works.
Yes, this is exciting. I mean, mostly because it hasn't done this. It's gotten better. But in the very beginning, when I first got the Dot, you would say, and we also lived in a smaller house then, you would say, you know, play Tech News Today, and it would start it in one room, and then it would start it slightly, you know, off. After, and then it would just be our voices slightly off, and it would be terrible. I wonder if you'll be able to do it with everything, or is it just with music?
Well, so there's supported for now Amazon Music, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, and SiriusXM coming soon. That makes me think that it's synced music in this case. Maybe that opens up to like podcast support at some point, although you can get podcasts in Spotify once that happens. And I don't know, do they do podcasts through Amazon Music? I don't think they do.
I don't think they do.
But that would be nice, I suppose, if you want a podcast in every single room in your house.
Well, that's what happened because I'm going down and getting the laundry. Yeah. I'm going upstairs, you
right.
know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have been doing a home test. Currently, we pay $14 a month for full family Apple Music. And Amazon Music, I have like a free trial. And I think it's only about $5 a month for their streaming. And so I'm trying to convince my family that everything we need is on Amazon Music. They disagree.
It's a tall order.
Well, also, I mean, my daughter has like a million playlists for every situation. Then she would have to, you know, put those over on Amazon Music, and she's not willing to do that. So I don't know. But then she's
Amazon
also...
Amazon Music also doesn't have the cool factor of Apple Music. Not for students, I'm imagining.
But you know what I realized recently? You know what has the coolest cool factor? SoundCloud.
Oh, yeah?
But it also, I learned, the teens are listening to a lot of SoundCloud. But they're also, there's a phrase I learned from the teens. You're welcome, everyone, for what I'm about to tell you. SoundCloud rappers. That's a derogatory term for, like, people that just, like, think they can rap and upload their raps to SoundCloud. You know, like, you probably did this when you were a kid. Like, you played, you know, you rapped and then you, like, recorded it on your...
I never rapped. I never recorded my raps, actually. I have a lot of recordings from when I was younger.
Yeah.
And there are probably a couple of really horrible raps in there.
And so what if your 12-year-old self had uploaded those to SoundCloud? And right now we could pull them up. Jason Howell, this is your life. No, I'm just kidding. I wish I had them. So anyway, that's a thing. It's like sort of in my world, it would be like a self-published author or something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, a SoundCloud rapper.
Whatever.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, it's a cool feature, regardless of whether you're listening to SoundCloud rap or not. It's nice to be able to hear that music, good or bad, in all rooms at the same time.
Right. I really veered off course there. Let's get back on course. Google and Apple are all in on AR. We will discuss with Russell Holly from VR Heads what that means after the break. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper. They are the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper, we've told you before, is a virtual phone system, and it's designed entrepreneurs, people who have created something, created their own business, and they don't want to spend a ton of money on a phone system. They don't want to spend their time trying to get the phone calls they need. They want to get them to their own personal phone. And Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but you don't have to purchase any new hardware. So you can use an iOS app or an Android app, and then callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. Whether you're new or you've been established for a while, you want to keep that brand. And having a phone number that looks good, maybe like an 800 number, That helps you look professional. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. They could think you're sitting in an office, a 10-story building, a office with a window. They don't know. All you have to do is select a toll-free or a local number, record a custom greeting, and then add multiple extensions for your business. You can make your business sound more professional by using Grasshopper. Like I said, use a toll-free number or a fancy number. Set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. 250,000, actually over 250,000 happy Grasshopper customers are already using the service, and you can join them. Plans start at $12 a month, and you have a 30-day money back guarantee. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit, and we thank Grasshopper for their support.
Remember how Asus literally just released a new phone called the Zenfone AR? You remember it because it's right here in my hands, for augmented reality using Project Tango hardware, that hardware that you see right there. Google just revealed a new project that might make consumers think twice about picking this up. Joining us to talk about this is Russell Hawley from VR Heads, but you were writing for iMore today. Welcome back to the show, Russell. It's great to have you back.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
All right. It's great to see you. Google announced its newest AR project, AR Core, or R Core, but it's probably AR Core, I'm guessing. Tell us a little bit about what this encompasses underneath. What's at the heart of this?
Sure. So AR Core is taking the computational stuff from Tango without the extra sensors. And so it gives a unique kind of spatial depth for augmented reality, where you can put something in a room and kind of move around that object and you know, see it from every angle just by looking through your phone the same way you would a Project Tango phone, but confined pretty much to that space right in front of you. You know, you're not going to be walking up and down stairs like you would with a Zenfone AR or something like that. This is localized and contained and very, very similar to Apple's AR kit, or at least what we've seen of it so far.
How localized? That's actually an aspect of this that I hadn't considered. With Project Tango, of course, early on when they were demonstrating this, like you were saying, you walk around, you go up, down flights of stairs, it's tracking the entire thing, mapping in real time. With AR kit, I just kind of assumed that it could do something similar to that, maybe not up and down, but like a full, like a huge room. We're in a big studio right now that I could go over there and find something over the corner over there versus here. Is that the same with R-Core? I want to call it R-Core now, but it's AR-Core.
I think we're just going to stick with R-Core for this, just because it sounds better. the benefit to Tango is that, Tango sensors use the different sensors to be aware of, different spaces in different rooms and three-dimensional space, whereas what we're going to see here is very much if it's in an open area, and it could be a massive open area or it can be a small room or a closet or something, and you place an object, then you'll be able to walk around that object and see it. But even in Google's language describing R-Core, it's very much a room that you're going to be operating in. And all of the video examples you see, either outside in an open area or in kind of a single room. And the reason for that is when you step into another room, your phone isn't going to know that there's a wall in between those things. So it's just going to look kind of awkward because that augmented reality thing is still going to be in the same physical place that you put it as far as, motion, like total steps away from it. But it's not going to know to not show that thing because there's a wall there. Whereas Tango would see the wall and say, okay, we don't show the augmented reality thing because there's a wall here.
Got it.
So what does this mean for Project Tango? I mean, will it still continue, or is this make it obsolete? I'm not sure about the two, the connection between the two.
Yeah, so, you know, Project Tango has been, is really the kind of what comes next. And then that's kind of the weird thing about this is that we've heard about Tango for so long because it's one of Google's many projects that they've done kind of in open development. But it's already been seen, you know, in places where R-Core would never work, like the International Space Station and museums and places like that, you know, where, you know, operating in three-dimensional space is important. And so Google's going to continue working on that because that really is the important next step for any form of augmented reality is being aware of more than just the thing that's immediately in front of you. But very much like Apple's AR kit, this gets consumers excited about the things that they could maybe do with augmented reality. Because right now it's really hard to explain to someone what augmented reality is and why they should care about it. But if you give someone a phone and say, you can draw something in space here and walk around and see that thing, and it's yours that you can then, you know, take a selfie with, that ends up being this really cool thing that they can, you know, they don't have to visualize in their mind. They can see it through the phone lens.
Yeah. It's very interesting that this is all happening like right around the same time, right? Like we hear about R-Core, which feels a little bit like a reaction to ARKit, which is Apple's thing. And then Apple, of course, today just unleashed this kind of gallery of ARKit experiences. Have you seen some of the stuff there? And how do you think, like are these pretty much on par? It feels kind of like the AR wars are on now between the two big platforms. They have their horses in the race, and it's about to take off. How do you think this is going to play out as far as that's concerned?
Honestly, they both seem really, really similar, you know, and we're talking about the same basic limitations from each set of hardware as far as what they can do with, you know, depth sensing and motion tracking and things like that. So it's difficult to say that one's going to be more capable than the other. I think where we're going to see degrees of difference, at least with the first wave of apps for both of these platforms, is what the hardware itself is capable of. You know, as much as I love my Android phones for you know, their low light, you know, sensors to be able to do this AR stuff in a dark room, I think we're going to see, you know, iPhones with their more capable processors and GPUs able to show more virtual objects in a space than an Android phone would before starting having, you know, kind of stuttering problems and maybe some performance issues. That's really speculative at this point. But I think that that's an area that we may end up seeing a significant difference, you know, as developers are kind of trying to figure out what, you know, how far this can be pushed.
And so when you're speculating about the hardware, are you thinking about like the next iPhone and the next Pixel or the current iPhone and the current Pixel?
Right now, I'm thinking about the current iPhone and the current Pixel, you know, and it's, you know, knowing that there isn't another processor coming out for that Android phones are going to have. Qualcomm doesn't have a processor coming out that's going to, you know, be leaps and bounds better than whatever Apple is working on next for you know, the processor and the next iPhone. The historically, they have been, you know, several degrees behind as far as overall performance. And there's no reason to suggest that that's going to change here as we move into October or November.
But the big argument that Apple was making with ARKit was, you know, now we're going to get AR into the hands of so many people, everyone with an iPhone. And I mean, you know, this is then Google can say we are too. I mean, they promised like support for 100 million devices by this winter. So it's really just saying, you know, like Jason said, it's the AR wars.
Accessibility is definitely the thing that's going to make this popular. My immediate concern with both of these platforms is, you know, developers who are able to release, you know, build things that are more than just a kind of a passing excitement. You know, all of the demos that we've seen so far, they're really cool to see, you know, kind of through this, you know, lens on the internet where they go, here's, you know, 10 examples of cool things that can happen. But nothing that I've seen so far suggests that I'm going to want to use any more of these things for more than 30 or 40 seconds before I go back to doing the things that I'm already normally doing on my phone. And so, you know, my hope is that, you know, we see, you know, augmented reality examples that people are going to continue to use. I hate to use this example, but like Pokemon Go or something like that, where it's something that people are going to constantly use over and over and over again instead of something they install and use for 30 seconds and then forget that it's on their phone.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, what you said there resonates a lot with me. In my experience with the Zenfone AR, I did a review on new screensavers last week. I'm going to do kind of a roundup of some of the Tango apps this week on new screensavers. But I mean, by and large, like there's a game called Towers for Tango, which is actually pretty impressive, right? Like you put it out, you find a flat surface, you basically drop a big playing field on the table and it stays there. And it's basically a tower simulator. It's a tower game where you build up towers and you can go in there and manage people and all this kind of stuff. Really cool use of the technology. However, at the same time, you get real tired of holding this thing out there and going up close and walking around it and everything like that. Like there's something really to be said for sitting back and relaxing and spending 2 hours just tapping at a screen versus holding this like weight out in front of you for long extended periods of time. Pokemon Go is probably a good example of people surviving in that use case for long periods of time. But I would have a hard time doing that in the majority of cases. It would be more like a one-off use case. And that makes me worry a little bit about AR.
Yeah, it's going to be the big challenge is, you know, what happens when people say, okay, I'm done with this, I want to go back to Facebook. And I've yet to see a compelling answer for any augmented reality platform, be it, you know, Tango or Arcor or ARKit for what that's going to be. But it's all still really, really early. So, you know, I suspect if we're going to get answers to that, we're not going to see them until probably January or February.
Yeah, and it's and knowing how Google develops, you know, builds these things out, it's going to take a while for developers to hop on board for this to actually result in anything tangible. Tango apps, you know, Tango's been around for a couple of years now in limited fashion, no doubt. But I think there's something like 37 total apps in the Play Store that you can get for Tango. Pretty
well. But that's the one thing though about this is they have support out of the box from Unreal Engine and Unity. Which are both engines being used in ARKit as well as just heaps of virtual reality applications. And so there's two things that could happen here. We could see ARKit developers with a really easy way to port their experiences to Android as well. Or we could see existing VR developers who are looking to kind of push themselves a little bit further using the Unity plugins for ARKit to grow that. So that I think Google actually has handled by making sure that they, like, part of the announcement was support from Unreal and Unity, and those are really big deals that Tango just doesn't have.
That's a really good point. Not only that really kind of brings me back to my long-term wish for this stuff, and I've thought about this about Tango for a very long time, is that if Tango is really great for tracking, as this will be for tracking, combine that with Daydream support and you've got mobile version of inside out tracking that could be really powerful compared to what we have already, especially with the motion controller. Those two things working together, that could be really compelling.
I think this is that what you're talking about there is a really big part of the Google Daydream standalone headset with the visual positioning system.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, that's pretty much exactly what you're talking about there. And I think that's a big part of what we're going to see moving into the fall.
Ah, okay. So now I'm excited again. All right. Russell Holly, VR Heads. And of course, his article today is in iMore. You can check it out. It might also be in VR Heads, but I saw it on iMore. Thanks as always for hopping on with us, Russell. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Good to see you. We got some feedback. Yes. Prentice writes, in show 1840 for Friday, you spoke about the Second Amendment. I'm curious how you interpret it because you mentioned that others don't interpret it correctly. I love the show until you guys insert politics, and then most times I skip ahead in the podcast. Thank you, Prentice. Did I say the Second Amendment? I might have said the Second Amendment, and that was my bad. I meant the First Amendment. And what I meant was that you have the freedom to protest, but I don't believe that you have the freedom to protest violently, and I think some people interpret it that way. Also, it officially says that Congress shall make no law to restrict free speech, but companies can restrict it. And so when someone says, you know, when Twitter blocks someone and someone says that's a violation of the First Amendment, then I think that's what I mean by people interpreting it not the same way I interpret it. And I apologize. That must have been very confusing if I said Second Amendment.
All the amendments are the same, right? Totally kidding.
Yes.
Totally kidding. Don't email me.
But we are not discussing the Second Amendment, and we do our best to only talk about politics when it relates to technology. And I think we try. Yeah. We're just doing our best.
Yeah, you know, we're humans. We're humans. Just like this human who is the fan of the day at Newfers on Twitter sent this picture saying, I listen to TNT while I shower via one of our four Amazon Echo devices. And no, I don't hold the Echo while I shower. Well, that's good news. Don't do that. That's a bad idea. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. I'm also happy that you don't shower with Google Glass on, because I know of this one guy that did that and it kind of went viral. So don't do that.
That is not the only How I Watch we've gotten in the shower. And
that's
I,
right. No, we've had the other in the bathtub. Instances. Yeah.
And I also sometimes listen to the show in the shower, TBH.
I don't. I don't listen to anything in the shower. I take a shower and then I'm done.
Yeah. I also check my email in the shower on my Apple Watch. I'm a multitasker. It's not always good. This week, you might have seen that the New York Post had a headline announcing that the New York Police Department had to replace 36,000 useless smartphones because they are Windows phones. While it is all fun and games to make fun of Windows phones, the truth is that this isn't another story of your tax dollars going down the toilet. The NYPD responded to the New York Post saying that they acquired the phones at no cost with an option to move off of the hardware in 2 years, also at no cost. So it's not as bad as it sounds. Mary Jo Foley has...
Not bad at all, actually.
No, but they... And they said that the reason why they went... They chose Windows phones because iPhones and Android phones didn't allow them to, quote, cost-effectively utilize prior investment in custom Windows applications.
Yeah, that was actually a big component of what Satya Nadella had laid out, I think, in 2015, is this idea that, sure, they would have consumer phones, but they would also have devices that were very customized to specific use cases. This would be kind of like a prime example of that.
Yeah, so, and then they're moving to iPhones. I am not sure what kind of deal they got. I don't work for the New York Police Department, sadly.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So if they said that they didn't have to pay any going in and then moving off the hardware 2 years later at no cost, does that mean that they get their iPhones for free?
I don't think that's what that means. Okay. I think just moving off, because it costs to get off of one platform and get onto another. Oh, okay. And so that would be no cost.
I see. The transfer over. They actually also said that the smartphone initiative is 45% under budget, which basically, along with this, gives them another 4 years of support at current spending. So they've got the money for iOS. They're jumping ship. They actually decided to do the transition last year, so it wasn't even this announcement that made them move in that direction. They had made changes to iOS that they thought were good enough to allow them to move over. They made that decision last year, so... So there they go. Mm-hmm. And here we go.
And yes.
Oh, sorry. Oh. Sorry. Burke has something. Let's get it in real quick. He says they should have jumped ship 3 years ago, says Burke. Boom goes the Burkamite.
I was also going to say the Toad Sloth in the chat room said it sounded good, but the kids laughed at them. I don't really know that if that's the reason why the NYPD switched off, but I mean, it must have been uncomfortable at times.
Yeah, there were lots of, Dad, really? Really? TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
Hey, have you subscribed? If you haven't, please do, twit.tv/TNT. And don't forget to join me on our 10-week cruise. I mean, cleanse. It would be nice if it was a 10-week cruise, wasn't it?
A 10-week cruise.
It feels
cruise.
Like a cruise. I'm already cruising through the digital cleanse on the new screensavers, hashtag digital cleanse. And subscribe to our other shows, All About Android, iOS Today. Go to twit.tv, search for shows, subscribe to some. And if you want to tweet at me, if you love your Windows phone, please tweet at me. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kevin. You are awesome, Kevin. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. You are so awesome, Burke. Thanks to Josh, who's editing, right? Oh, never mind. You don't get a thanks, Josh. See, it's Tuesday and I remembered and he's not editing this Tuesday. Josh.
Why not?
Yeah. What's his problem? Thanks again, Kevin, for all that you do.
Saying.
Thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.